We've been instilled with tactics and training for battling enemies overseas, but we are not taught how to battle the ones within. When the combat zone becomes your comfort zone, what becomes of the home front? I'm Tom.
And I'm Jen. Together, we're tackling tough topics to conquer whatever challenge you're facing, from your soft unit to your family unit, with our amazing lineup of guests, including special operators, field experts,
and so much more. This isn't your typical cool guy podcast. Welcome to All Secure. Jesse Gould is a pioneer in psychedelic therapies. As a former Army Ranger and founder of the Heroic Hearts Project, he has spearheaded the research and acceptance of ayahuasca, ibogaine, ketamine, and psilocybin programs for military veterans. Heroic Hearts Project has connected countless veterans to psychedelic treatments, partnered with the world's leading psychedelic centers, and is researching psychiatric applications with the University of Colorado Boulder, the University of Georgia, University of Texas Austin, and Imperial College of London. His mission is to help military veterans struggling with mental trauma and spread awareness of the benefits that psychedelic therapies offer as an alternative treatment to pharmaceuticals. Jesse has spoken globally about the benefits of psychedelics on mental health and has been featured in the New York Times, The New Yorker, The Economist, and Forbes, and recognized as one of the most influential voices in psychedelics today. And we are lucky enough to have him here today with us on our podcast.
Jesse has been really instrumental in, I think, opening up the aperture, right? And just understanding what psychedelics are, how they're used, kind of breaking down the barriers that people might have in understanding or misunderstanding about psychedelics. So I think it's really important to listen to this podcast today, even if you're on the fence or maybe you're not even interested at all.
He certainly lays it out in the podcast where you can understand it, identify if it's right for you, and make a decision that, once you're well-informed, will be a better decision.
Yeah, let's dive right in. Hi, Jesse. Welcome. Thank you so much for joining Tom and I today.
Thank you both for having me. This is exciting. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, we've been looking forward to it. In fact, just had some conversations this morning about Heroic Hearts, but
topics everybody's dying to hear about. Nobody wants to admit doing or talk about. And then they're terrified. But once it comes out, you're like, yes, there it is.
Yeah.
I think Joe Rogan did a real good.
Just a few things on it.
So that was helpful.
Well, we can get into that, but let's start at the beginning, or kind of the beginning. Love to hear a little bit about your experience in the military.
So I kind of had an unusual path where I was actually in a professional aspect beforehand. I was in finance and investment banking, ended up joining and enlisting. And so came in bottom barrel and ended up going through Ranger. I was at 1st Battalion, 75th Ranger in Savannah, Georgia. Over the course of that, ended up being an NCO and a section leader. I was in the mortar platoon, so in charge of a lot of junior Rangers. And then when I was in my time, it was mostly Afghanistan deployment. So going over there to all sorts of different places. Overall, I had a really good military career, but, you know, within that, which will kind of lead into the later conversations, is you become exactly the soldier. Like, the original program was Ranger indoctrination program, right? Like, you're changing from a civilian to be the soldier that works in a group that is able to be in these extreme situations. And then I got the sort of added benefit of the mortar explosions near my head on a pretty regular basis, or door breaches, or, you know, whatever else we shook up our brains with.
So a healthy dose of TBI to go along with it. Did you know when you were in, did you ever have that diagnosis of TBI, traumatic brain injury?
No. So when I got out, it was just sort of a quick get out of here as soon as possible. Special operations is particularly sort of walk it off mentality. So when you're out processing and going there, it's pretty much like, hey, you good? You good? Okay. But during that time, there was never even once that I heard traumatic brain injury associated with anything I was doing, mortars or otherwise. And it was really sort of this self-discovery when things were starting to go bad for me and my mental health that I kind of had to start looking into what could be the possible options. I think it's changing, but when I was in the military, it was really sort of this binary of, like, if you had mental health issues, it was classified as PTSD. And so you either had that or you didn't. And that kind of has become this sort of blanket term for any sort of mental health issue that you have, which is kind of a disservice because, you know, a lot of us process traumas differently. A lot of us come from different issues, PTSD is just not necessarily always the best way to understand it, or just kind of as a disservice to other things. Like if you have traumatic brain injury, it can make your PTSD worse, or it could be its own standalone thing. So when I got out, I knew I was like struggling with something, and it was labeled as PTSD, but it really, for me, didn't seem like to be the full extent of the story.
And you that's know, so interesting. It
even
was the same
talk
for you.
About special operations. Number one, it brings me back to the days of the nerds versus the athletes. You know, it's like, I'm not doing that. They're all over here doing the stuff everyone should be doing. And special ops are like, we don't need to sit down and listen to this. We don't need to do that. You know, I, at least people I know, and I didn't listen.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, hey, you should go down and see the doc about this and that. And everybody's like, yeah, I'm fine. I'm good. Rub dirt on it and keep moving, you know? And
well, statistically, it takes an operator 13 years to ask for help.
We already know everything that we think we need to know. It's kind of funny that you talked about getting out in the indoctrination process that we discussed earlier. Was that's where you kind of line everything up, and nobody addresses the fact that we're changing physically, but we're also changing mentally. They're breaking you down in basic training. I was talking about this with Jen the other night about, you know, our bathrooms were like 20 toilets lined up on one wall, like no walls in between them. You know, and the sinks were in front of you, and the walkway to get to the shower and the urinals were right between you. You broke down every barrier. They changed who you were. And then when we get out, we're like, I'm good.
Yeah.
And we wonder why we're different.
Well, and not only that, like when you get out, you lose everything. You get so used to this mode because that's what you're trained for. That's what you're indoctrinated for. Then all of a sudden you're trying to fit into like a corporate job where one, you tend to lose your brotherhood, sisterhood of the people you served with. You're more likely than not going to have the same sort of importance of what your job is. So there's like a deficit across those sort of landscapes. But then also part of that indoctrination is getting you in this sort of mindscape that you're geared towards these high stress, high energy situations. That's where you're like, you're always this animal on the hunt. And when you put something like that in a cage that it can't do anything, you're just going to have all this energy or all this, these sort of resources you're not using. Added, I think, with the operator side of it is that a lot of us, I think the reason we get to that spot is because we're very high functioning. And so I think that was part of my problem too, is like on the outside and in professional, I was still doing great. You know, I was getting compliments from like the CFO and everything. On the inside, I was like going downhill fast. I could keep it going for a while, even though it'd be more and more unhealthy.
What was the thing that made you say, I can't keep going down this path?
I think I'm fortunate that I just saw red flags. I don't think there's one thing in particular, but there were just certain moments where, you know, alcoholism was really sort of the thing that was starting to control my life just because it was my tool for masking the depression or the anxiety. The alternative was medication, which had its own perils. And so I was like, okay, well, I can either be medicated or I can be drunk and kind of enjoy it. You know, there didn't really seem to be anything else. And so it was just certain things like that where, you know, I'd have to like wake up with a bottle of beer just to, you know, get into work and be somewhat functional, or just coming home late at night after, you know, in the middle of the week, having a busted up hand or falling over, you know, stuff like that where like, hey, this is not normal life. This is not what other corporate America people are doing. The problem with the mental health stuff is it all couples with itself. So it's just like, you tend to get out of shape. You tend to just be unhappy. It affects your relationships. And so I just found myself in this spot where there's just nothing I could point to that I was like proud of or that I felt like it was going for me. And so it was around that time when I started making sort of more conscientious choices where it was just more and more apparent of like, hey, if I'm going down this path, it's going to end up badly in some sort of way. Didn't really know specifically, but I knew it wasn't going to be a good, happy ending for me. And so I tried more like holistic stuff, going back to the gym, doing more regimented stuff, finding good groups of people that weren't just based around drinking and all that kind of stuff. And it helped a little bit, but there was just some sort of overwhelming weight that I think just prevented me from getting to my full efficiency or full capacity. Like I wasn't living up to like that climax ranger sense of self that I used to have.
Why do you think we do that? Why is it that we know we're doing wrong? We know it's not good for us. We know we're sliding fast, but yet we won't admit it. We won't ask for external help when we really know we need it. We don't have the answers. What takes us so long? The independence? Is it the stubbornness? Is it the stupidity?
Ego,
the ego? Is it? Ego is a good one, I think, that covers a lot of it. What do you think it is?
It's sort of the nature of the beast. To get through these selection processes, you have to be I think it selects for people that are unusually stubborn, or, you know, you have this sense in yourself and you have the stubbornness. Like, there's no logical person that would be, you know, in the freezing weather outside with no cold weather gear on and it starts to rain and you still have to go and you're hungry. Like, all that doesn't appeal to a normal person, but there we are finding ourselves in those situations all the time.
Could we call it dominance versus stubbornness?
Yeah, maybe dominance. I think that sense of self, it's the dual-edged sword too, right? Like, you have to believe in yourself to be able to accomplish all that kind of stuff, but sometimes that can come at a detriment. What led me on this course too, like, if I didn't believe in myself and I wasn't stubborn in some sense, I would never have gone to Peru. I would have never, like, hey, no, there has to be an answer out there. I probably would have just submitted to the regimen the VA was trying to push on me. I think it's that kind of balance of, like, your greatest attribute can also be your greatest weakness.
Yeah, I like to liken that to changing the obstacle course name to confidence course. You know, it's like, oh, there's an obstacle in my way, but we were identifying the negative. There's an obstacle in the way. Oh, they changed it to it's a confidence course, because you're going to get past that obstacle.
Reframe it.
And it's going to show you how. So it's like reframing it. And yet we wait so long to go seek it out, but most of us end up seeking it out, right? If we make it past those stages, we're going to seek it out. But why do we wait so long? That's the thing I'd like to crack one day, is why do we wait so long? Is it dominance? Is it stubbornness? You know, I can conquer anything to include my own problems, you know?
Yeah.
Well, everyone has their own path and journey, and, right, and the length of time it takes is up to the individual. So you were led to Peru. I'm dying to know, what took you to Peru?
Yeah. So there I was, kind of in this spot where I was just struggling and nothing, like I said, in my life I could point to. I didn't have a good, healthy relationship. You know, even my job, where at first is sort of challenging, it just kind of became more and more of that corporate job where you're just making cogs and doing the same thing every single day, every single month. And so that was starting to drive me insane. So it's just like everything. I was just not happy with my life. There's no pride in it. There's no purpose there. I tried to go to the VA. It was the fast track to medications. I wasn't really interested at that time because medications can definitely help, but I've seen the bad sides of them too. In my mind, the choice between alcohol or medications, and but I knew something was off. And fortunately, around that time, Tom, you mentioned Rogan. I was just listening to podcasts in my spare time, and I think ayahuasca came up on one of his podcasts. And I kind of listened to it first as just kind of more of an entertainment value, right? Like somebody's trip journey kind of thing, fighting dragons. I didn't really think much of it. And I didn't have any experience with psychedelics, didn't have any interest in psychedelics. I think we all kind of came from sort of like, that's a drug path. That's not maximizing your performance. That's not maximizing your potential. That's a different path. That brought it up. And then I just did some research, just bored at work and kind of looking into this ayahuasca thing, because it kind of intrigued me. And I think just little by little, it sort of planted the seed and it became all right in my head. I think it took some time for my head to be all right with, like, even the possibility of me doing a psychedelic.
Right.
Yeah, that's funny. It took me from the time, I think, Jesse, I first talked to you a couple of years ago, maybe like 2019. Yeah. And it was after a New York Times article. And I found it fascinating. I was really happy to connect you with you about it. It's just started chirping around the community about ayahuasca. For somebody who's listening who doesn't know what that is, how would you describe ayahuasca?
Psychedelics in general, I think everybody kind of has some sort of idea. And psychedelics, generally speaking, are mind-altering, generally hallucinogenic substances. We all kind of know LSD, maybe some psilocybin, which are mushrooms. You take it, you generally see things, colors, patterns, shapes. There tends to be a psychedelic in most cultures around the world and in a lot of different ecosystems. So in the Amazon region of South America, so notably Brazil, Peru, Ecuador, Colombia, there's this drink called ayahuasca, and it's a combination of two Amazonian plants. One, ayahuasca, is a vine, and then combined with a leaf, generally chacruna in Peru. The leaf chacruna has a chemical called DMT, and the DMT is a psychedelic sort of component of it. And when combined with this vine and brewed together, it creates this really thick drink, this tea. And when you drink that, it causes a very intense psychedelic experience that generally lasts 4 to 5 hours. It has been around in ceremonial settings in indigenous tribes for thousands of years across the whole Amazon basin. And in those tribes, they've always used it as a sacrament to help their people, their tribe, with spiritual health, mental health, physical health, just connectivity. psychedelics sometimes are even used for hunting purposes because they do enhance your senses and health as well. Ayahuasca has become more popular in Western societies, kind of this rediscovering from a Western perspective, because in addition to all that, there's a lot of anecdotal evidence and now some scientific evidence showing that it can be tremendously beneficial for a lot of mental health issues, including depression, PTSD. We've even seen some help with addiction. So a lot of people are pursuing this, going to South America, and it's even come to the US in some cases, and going through these ceremonies. What we're seeing now, like you said, this information is kind of trickling into society as more veterans themselves are seeking this out, where across the board, we're kind of rediscovering that psychedelics are not just about, you know, having fun at a concert with friends or tripping in somebody's basement. There does seem to be a medical potential to them, which is being backed by research at like Johns Hopkins University, Stanford University, Harvard. We just formed a study with University of Texas, Austin. So some major names across it are looking at these substances with sort of new eyes of how can they help. And it's also sort of coupled with the fact that the current mental health treatments for PTSD have been pretty abysmal in how effective they are. I'm sure most of your audience is aware it's been sort of a mental health crisis for the veteran population with record rates of suicide. And despite hundreds of billions of dollars going to it through the VA, they really haven't been able to find any sort of resolution to it.
It's still getting worse.
Yeah, I was going to say, not only is it not going down, it's tripling. And really, I think a lot of people in mainstream, like non-military civilian culture, have no idea. I know I didn't. And when I talk to people, they think I'm full of shit, frankly. They're like, there's no way there's 22 suicides a day. I'm like, you're right. It's probably closer to 30 to 38. And people can't get their head around that. They can't wrap their head around that kind of epidemic. And the next question is, who's doing something about it? And how do you stop this? And what can I do? A lot of people have been scratching their heads around this for some time. And there isn't been this one magic bullet or this magic pill. And I know you and I have talked, and the three of us had a conversation not that long ago about there is no magic pill, but this is something that's pretty close, something that's going to significantly help you with your mental health challenges. Tom and myself went through your organization and had a ceremony, and we've talked about it every day since.
It's definitely not like high school and having a psychedelic experience while going to a concert or the mall. I couldn't have gone anywhere. I know one of the things out of my mouth when I was done and I came back to and sat up, I think the first thing out of my mouth was, who in the right mind could do this recreationally? It was, right. You know, it's not one of those things where
people or like you're going to get addicted to it and want to do it all the time.
Yeah, no. But it opened up so much in my life.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the benefit too, and what we were trying to provide with Baroque Arts Project. And there also is a way of doing it filled with intention where it's controlled setting, you know, like where you guys went. It's a very specific program, specific dosages, how to do it. And within that, it really, it's hard to mistake it for anything else. And oftentimes some people might see beautiful stuff, but they're doing work while they're in the experience. And to your point, Jen, that's, you know, what we're trying to emphasize too, is there's no magic pills in this game. There's no silver bullets. Psychedelics have been shown in a lot of cases to accomplish things that other treatments have not. But no matter what, it takes work. Anytime you go into this, there's preparation. The experience itself can be very challenging. And then the after side of it, what this does oftentimes, it can help your brain physically, but oftentimes it shows you negative patterns. It shows you ways that you view the world and new ways of viewing it. But you still have to incorporate good patterns in your life for that to take hold. What I say to people is, like, if you go into there with trauma, have all these great visions and self-understanding, but then your first stop is the bar when you get home, you're probably going to fall right back into your old patterns.
Isn't that the truth? I mean, I think people want the easy pill, you know, the quick fix, of course.
We hear this story time and time again. Friends of ours, people like, we just met, back on, fall off the wagon. Yeah. Well, it's still work.
Yeah.
There's still intention and work every day that you wake up. There's still intention and work.
And I think we're meant to, as humans, we're meant to work on ourselves. We're meant to grow and we're meant to continue that process. And once you stop doing that, you stop growing. And who really wants to stop putting in the work? from time to time, it requires more or less, but you still need to work on behavioral change. You know, Tom and I didn't do ayahuasca. We did the 5-MeO-DMT, and we could have come back and just brushed it aside and gone right back to our life as it was. And that would have been very easy to do. But instead, we became very intentional with the messages that each of us received. And I think every single day, I recall that. And I pull that forward and I ask myself, how do I want to be different? How do I want this situation to be different? Because one thing it did definitely do for both of us is create a hyper-awareness into our own behavior.
It's a force multiplier. Like, yeah. Not any one thing works. We had done years of work prior to going. So I think that enhanced it. It multiplied it. It made it all better. It all made sense. And it could apply it better. Had we done it in reverse, we would have done that and then done the work after. The work is still there. The layers are still there. And the different modalities have all worked. This one, for me, was a game changer.
You've definitely been different, very noticeably different since.
Yeah.
Absolutely. For 100%.
Sure. I'd like to get to the part about how we keep people from not doing this, or how we get the right people to do this, or how someone can know this is for them.
I'm sure you get that all the time, Jesse. Like, who's this for? Is this for me? Or
how do we get past the fear? Or it's a drug, or you're just partying, you know, or I'm going to get fired, or I'll die. You know, all of those things that went through my head for years of, oh, what if I do it? What happens? What if I open my mouth and say something secret? You know, all those things that I know guys go through when they lose control of their faculties, really.
Yeah.
One, it's not for everybody. A lot of times people come from this and they feel great. They want to just tell, hey, you should go. You have all this. We encourage people not to do that. The best way to have other people sort of be interested in doing it is just living your own best life. And that's what we always tell people. The best way you're an ambassador is, share the word and talk about it like we're doing now. And you're never going to convince somebody, or you shouldn't persuade them to go when they're not ready. But what I've always found, and what we've found with people who go through our program, is when they really get a benefit and that they change their life, then their family, then their friends start asking like, hey, what did you do? Like, I noticed you were this really reactive person before, and now you're like super calm and managed, and you're really taking. And when that happens, then people see like, hey, maybe this is something I can look into. Versus if you're just saying it, but then you're still doing the bad habits, then people are not going to sign on. What Heroic Hearts does, we're in this situation, right, where we've established that whatever the VA is doing is not necessarily working that well with mental health. For some cases, it does. I'm not discouraging anybody from going. They should pursue that resource and work with professionals. But there's a lot of people that fall through the cracks or just need some other thing. They've tried all sorts of therapy. They tried all sorts of medications. And so those are generally ones that find us. So what we do as a program, because there really was no infrastructure for people, and why I started this, I didn't want somebody just to book a flight to Peru and figure out when they got there. I wanted them to actually have support so they can make this choice intelligently. And so what we do is when people come to us, we do a basic sort of intake. One, there's safety considerations. Certain medications can interact in a dangerous manner with psychedelics. Certain health conditions, you know, heart conditions, history of mental health issues like schizophrenia or psychosis all need to be factored in, because some of them are just absolute no-goes. And then also just where the person's at in their healing journey. Ideally, people like you who have already done work, some cognitive behavioral therapy, or have done some self-work, meditation, yoga, they tend to stick to this better because they understand the work that's involved, and they understand when they have this great asset that the psychedelic provides them, they really will take it running because they understand how valuable that is and how unique the experience is. So people like yourself who have done other work are perfect candidates. And that being said, other people, if they get to that spot where this might make sense and they feel ready, then we can help connect them. We never want to put somebody in a spot where they're not really ready for it. They feel pressured or anything like that, because then they're not going to give it their all. They're going to feel sort of, like I said, pressured going into there. So there's this kind of fine line. And so what I found is people will consider it, they'll hear podcasts like this, and then it'll start planting a seed in their brain. And then eventually they'll get to their spot where they're just kind of tired of struggling, of tired of going through their same patterns over and over again, not making any progress in their life with other ways. And then if psychedelic seems like the right fit, then that's where programs like ours come in, where we can provide that container of support and really help them along the path. And to kind of reiterate, it's not just about going there, drinking ayahuasca or taking a mushroom or smoking 5-MeO-DMT. it's about the whole process. And what we establish is we do about 4 to 6 weeks of preparation before. You talk to coaches, all the retreat centers we've worked with, they're safe. They provide safe environments. They know what they're doing. And then the after side, talking about integration, following up with people who can help you, and then making actual positive changes in your life, whether it's an exercise routine or journaling or meditation. All of these things, like you said, Tom, are force multipliers, where if you have that and you do a little work, it's really going to change your life. If you come from it and you don't do any work, it still might be beneficial, but the effects are going to be far less lasting.
I can attest to that. It has certainly changed my life.
And it was like a slow build.
Hour and a half experience of my life.
An hour and a half. I described it as 3 days in an hour and a half.
Yeah. I described it as the most horrific and terrifying experience of my life, but the most wonderful joy I've ever had in my life at the same time. And it just kind of culminated with answers for me. I had questions. It answered those questions. And since then, I've noticed profound changes that grew even over time.
Yeah. I mean, I saw joy on your face like I had never seen. It was almost like something crack opened.
I remember crying. Totally. I was so happy. Like, yes, never been that happy in my
beaming
life.
But I would even say like the more behavioral stuff I started to notice was maybe 2 or 3 weeks after, where it felt like something had clicked.
To me, it was an easier flashback to a more joyful memory, a recent joyful memory versus a horrible memory from the past. Further back, it's like a blockage or something for me that I don't go back that far. I go back to, man, I was really happy. Why am I arguing right now? This is stupid. You know, I'm getting emotional talking about it because it gives me chills that I don't dive into that evil behavior right away now. I have something that slows me down and says, wait a minute, you're being an idiot. And I stop and we pull back quicker. And that's the one only thing of everything I've tried that's actually worked.
The unique side of psychedelic experience like that is, one, exactly what you referred. The vast majority of people that come from it have almost this ability to zoom out from their life. You know, before it, we all tend to get like very myopic in whatever it is. So if it's, you know, our anger or anxiety, it just builds and builds and builds. We just get sucked into it. Whereas post a psychedelic retreat, it almost gives us this ability to either see ourselves or see the same pattern emerging.
Yes.
And then that way, that gives you that sort of tactical pause where you can take that step back and be like, hey, why am I going down this? This doesn't matter. Let me just sidestep this. And so you still might be angry or you still might be anxious, but you don't go down that like whirlpool where things just blow up or you start yelling or what have you. That's a very unique side of it. The other side of it that you mentioned is, I think a lot of veterans and operators, we tend to get more and more emotionally cut off or numb. Just, I think the nature of the work is, if you really spent the time to process everything you're doing, it would be sort of overwhelming. You know, you're kind of this machine, for lack of a better sort of word, when you're over there, because you're doing a job. It's very specific, but it's in oftentimes unpleasant, horrific settings.
Nothing's shocking anymore. Nothing would be shocking anymore, you know?
It's a process, because when we don't express emotions, those are all stored in trauma in our body, and we often hold them very physically. And so it can manifest into health issues or outbursts or changes in personality or just not reactivity. So you're just kind of numb to the world. And so this whole process with the psychedelic is, it brings up these emotions finally, and one, helps you process the ones that you've been storing, the ones you've been sort of compartmentalizing. But two, for future times, like you said, you're getting emotional there. Like, that's part of it. A healthy human, a healthy civilian should have emotions, right? You should react to situations. It should affect you.
No.
And so
don't.
It's the relearning.
No, we don't.
So old.
You
Tom.
Have emotions.
I got something in my eye.
That's old Tom talking.
Right. That's the joke of what you learn. You know, rub dirt on it. We're teaching people, no, that causes an infection. You know, it's don't rub dirt on it. Give it the attention it needs. You know, give your feelings, emotions, the attention they need, that's why we're having all these problems.
Yeah, absolutely.
What releasing time.
I heard from a lot of spouses, kind of this fear. My husband's going off, he's going to go down to Peru. he's going with a group of veterans. Okay, yeah, great. Yeah, what if he comes back and he doesn't want to be with me anymore? What if he comes back and he's so different that he's unrecognizable? Or just these kind of fears of the unknown, the unexpected. What would you say to a spouse who's kind of going through that?
Yeah, so in terms of the fears, and I think Tom brought up another fear of the person themselves, of like revealing sensitive information or what have you. And, you know, generally speaking, we can always work with people if they have that sort of biggest fear. It really doesn't happen just because you're so disoriented. When you're in any sort of psychedelic experience, you're in an alternative dimension. So even your English is probably not going to be understandable. Right. So it really, it's not like you're just open and telling all these things. There's always ways of doing it. Like we have more anonymous sort of retreats, all that kind of stuff, but it really doesn't happen. In terms of the change of personality, to highlight, there's a partner organization called the Hope Project, formed by Allison Wilson. So she's a veteran spouse. And so she formed that nonprofit to help the spouses so that they can be better prepared and build that sort of supportive system for themselves, but then also go on in these experiences themselves to help their trauma from, you know, being a part of that team that was traumatized. So psychedelics don't change your baseline personality. You're always going to be yourself. You're always going to be Tom. You're always going to be Jen, but it can just unburden you from the things that that you've been storing. If Tom in 2019 was drastically different because he was just numb or just not reacting to the world, then yeah, it can help that. And there might be changes there. But you're still going to have the same sense of humor. You're still going to be the same kind of like person. You're still going to have the same friends, same interests, all that kind of stuff. It never changes that dynamic of you. It just really unburdens you or makes you less reactive in a trauma state. You know, it makes you less pushed by these uncontrolled emotions or uncontrolled traumas. With the spouse side of things, I can't say it won't happen because oftentimes by the time somebody's seeking help, there's been already so much damage to the relationship that it's just kind of going through the motions or it becomes to the path of no return. And so Sometimes people, both husband and wife, go through these experiences and they kind of realize like, hey, this has run its course. Like I did love this person, but I think we're kind of in different spots. But that was already inevitable to happen. True. It wasn't because of the transformation of the person. But then other people, they come back and they realize like how much their trauma has done damage. And so then they come back and like, hey, I want to change and I want to be that person. I want to be that positive partner. And so it can really enforce that. So it's kind of like any sort of relationship. It just sort of depends on where it is, but it will reinforce if that person's in there that you really love, that person's not going to change. It's still going to be that same person.
I think our relationship has gotten much stronger since. Yeah. I'm really glad that like I went through the experience as well. You're right. There wasn't really a language for it. And they said, you're going to have a really tough time describing it, you know, when you come to the other side of it. So I was kind of glad when Tom was telling me like, God, that was the scariest I've ever been in my life. I'm like, I know exactly what you're talking about. Would you recommend for couples to go together?
Depends on the couples themselves. I generally, if it's just people I don't really know that well or what have you, I generally prefer to have them go independently because when you're there, it really allows you to focus on yourself, almost be selfish a little bit in your going into that. Especially with certain couples, you don't know where they're at in their relationship. And so when you go through these psychedelic experiences, one of it is you really want to open up. You want to share stuff that's going, you want to be vulnerable. You want to really do a deep dive into yourself. And so sometimes if they're there with a partner or somebody they know, they still might shield themselves from fully opening up because there might be some dynamic there where they're not fully open. But then there's the other side of it. A lot of us are kind of nurturers or caregivers. And so you might be so focused on your partner, even when you're in the psychedelic experience, that you're not giving yourself the due attention. You might be like worried, like, oh, I hope they have a good experience. I hope they're doing well. Oh, I hope that's not them crying. And then that's distracting from yourself. Whereas if you're there by yourself, you really give yourself that time and the attention you deserve in an isolated spot. You're generally with people you don't know or have a different relationship. So you might be more open to really like going into this of like, this is where I feel vulnerable. And this is even where I'm sad about my relationship. It gives you that sort of fresh slate. But that being said, if both couples do their own work and they get to that spot, then I think it can be a beautiful thing for them to go together. You know, if they've already done a lot of work together and all that kind of stuff, then the psychedelic experience, it's sort of, you know, both going into this sort of deep dive and there's a connectivity that you can feel in these experiences that's hard to replicate. So I definitely think that can be beneficial as part of a relationship maturing. I mean, they even, it's not a traditional psychedelic, but MDMA should be legal. It's been having phenomenal results with PTSD, should be legal to prescribe by this time next year, if not a little bit later. That's one of those that people know as like ecstasy and a party drug, again, kind of one of these things, but when done in a proper setting with a therapist, it can be a heart opener. And so that one has been very effective for couples therapy too, because it puts both couples in the spot where it brings up trust. It brings up people to be open, and they're not, you know, with couples, sometimes we get to a spot where we're afraid of saying our truth. We're afraid of either the backlash or afraid of being vulnerable. And so these substances can help in sort of being honest with each other and really seeing where each other's at.
I have heard so many incredible stories of couples who have used MDMA and really have heightened and enriched the relationship. I think where people get into a danger zone is when they're looking for something to save their relationship. And often we see that all the time at All Secure Foundation too. It's almost this desperate place, like you had talked about, where the damage is so severe because it's been years and years and years of trauma that sometimes couples have a really hard time coming back from that. So they're looking for that quick fix. They're looking for like, if I do this, is this going to save us? Tom and I talk about it all the time, is that we have to make a daily commitment to ourselves to put in the work and a daily commitment to each other for this relationship and putting in the work for our relationship. So for us, it was a really profound experience. I can see for other people how it could go wrong, or it could maybe not go wrong is the right way to put it, but that you would really encourage people to kind of have this individual experience and to have that place to figure it out and then come back together stronger or figure out those pieces. Because Tom's journey and mine were very, very different. I've had people ask like, oh, did they kind of intersect? He did it first. I went next. So I was in the room watching Tom go through it. He was in the room watching me, which
I can only imagine how scary that must have been.
I had tears running down my face the entire time. And I was super conscious because they're like, don't interfere with him. Like, don't touch him. Don't talk to him as much as you want to. Like, you could be in the room, but you need to be a fly on the wall. So I said, I understand completely, kind of took a pillow poof in the corner. And I was even afraid to blow my nose because I'm like, what if he can hear me crying, you know? So,
right.
But to witness it was profound for our relationship. And just like you said, like when we were done with it, we're like, we are not going to be prophets of this. We're not going to go around and say, hey, everybody, you need to try this and you need to do this. If someone feels called to it, it was 2 years of research for me. It was 2 years of trying to figure out if this was right for me before I did this. And right. Tom and I had multiple conversations where I said, listen, I feel really called to this. I don't want you to come unless you feel called to this. Don't do this for me or with me unless 100% you feel like this is part of your journey, because I do think you need to come to this experience on your own and be very willing and open and have intention. And it wasn't to say that we weren't afraid. I mean, I had fears going into it too, but I will tell you, working with the people we worked with, they were so, oh my gosh,
soothing.
I mean, just knowledgeable, warm. And the experience was made better by them and by their experience. So I don't want people to kind of say, well, I'm afraid too. So maybe that means I shouldn't do it. Most things that we do, we're kind of afraid to step into. And, you know, I also encourage people to take ownership of their own healing. If you feel like this is something that sounds interesting, we're going to give out Jesse's organization information. Start doing the research, look into it, try and spend some time sitting with it to see if it's right for you.
And that's a good question. People don't need to know which they need to go through, but is there something that you kind of talk with them about to look for? Like, you need the ayahuasca, or, oh no, you should go for the 5-MeO or
Ibogaine
or something.
Yeah, we try to avoid the, like, you need this. We're not doctors, but I think we're coming into a new way of understanding mental health. Like, I think we need as much as possible. There's some value to it, but try to get away from the, like, prescription side of it. Because one, mental health issues, like I was discussing before, PTSD, are so complex. And, you know, you and I, Tom, you know, we might be similar, or we might process trauma differently. We might have different walks of life or different childhoods. And so it's hard for me or any doctor to know what really is going on or what will be the best effect. But on the other side too, part of the mental health journey, which psychedelics can help about, is being in charge of your own mental health. Like you just said, being accountable, you know, understanding yourself enough to where you can help make the right choices or guidance. So a lot of this process is reconnecting you to trust yourself and reconnecting you to your intuitions. When we have these issues, it's because our intuition, our gut feeling, our telling of like, hey, like I had the red flag, like, hey, you need to do something about this. Otherwise you're going to end up pretty bad. And so there are ones that will say like, hey, this is not right for you because of health considerations. You know, if you're on like SSRIs or other medications, then that's kind of no for ayahuasca and some other ones. If you have major heart issues, especially not ibogaine. And so there's some that are just like, hey, either not now or not ever because of the health considerations. You know, I talked with both of you for a while and it was many factors of like, what do you guys feel comfortable with? What's your timeline? What's your schedule? I know in terms of like international travel was a big thing for you, Tom, and just in terms of the security of the spot. All these kind of things we factor in, but then at the end of the day, we just inform and then let you make the informed decision because then you're owning it and it's not somebody telling you how to heal yourself. You're like, hey, I'm feeling comfortable with this. And then when you get the good results, it's sort of reinforcing that. We provide the information. We definitely tell them in terms of safety, like this is not, but then really help them make their own decisions and help them trust their own intuition. And when they make those decisions, then that's where we also come in terms of providing the support that they'll get the most out of it.
Yeah. I mean, what a service because...
I know, I felt comfortable the whole time.
Yep, 100%. We had developed a relationship with you and a trust, but the experience was, I mean, it was perfect. It really helped ease any fears. The practitioners were amazing, incredible. It's one of those things that now I feel like Tom and I had talked and I said, you know, I might do ayahuasca one day. I might want that experience and I might want to go do that, you know, with a group of women. You mentioned Hope Project and I've spoken to Allison and that sounds like something that maybe down the road I would be interested in doing. So I guess my question is, people have asked, is this a one and done? Is this a multiple or how does that work?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. It's one that comes up all the time. And again, I think we need to rethink this in terms of looking at it more as like your healing journey. And because in the healing journey, like we mentioned, there's hard work, there's daily maintenance, there's things you have to do as opposed to just getting your prescription and making sure you take it every day. So we need to sort of start transitioning into this. So, because it's a whole life thing of like, did I go to the gym? Am I eating healthy? Am I having a good social and intimate relationships, as well as what am I doing for the psychological and spiritual side? So that is sort of figuring out where the psychedelic fits into your life, as opposed to do I need to take this every day, every month, every whatever. So what we say is, you know, a lot of people, they'll go through it, they'll have a pretty powerful experience, and that's really all they need to kind of like hit the ground running, and they might not reintroduce it. A lot of people will explore others. Each modality kind of has different ways of delivering different messages. You can learn different things about yourself. So it might fit into there. What we always suggest is that if you do go back, just always go back with intention, like understand why you're going back and understand what you're looking to go into. If you're going to ayahuasca, like you said, you're putting a lot of thought into it, Jen. And so if you do want to go back, like what you mentioned, is this a good group? Is this the right time for me? Why am I going into this? What am I looking for? That will guide you again. It'll be kind of aligned with your intuition of like, hey, life's been pretty hard. I think I'm kind of falling back, but I've done some really good stuff. Maybe this can help me, you know, adjust a little bit more. On the alternative, if you're taking, you know, a psychedelic every single day, trying to resolve the same sort of negative patterns that you've been trying to resolve for the past 5 years, you're going to an ayahuasca retreat every month to try to resolve that, then in my mind, that's a dependence and that's not necessarily a healthy relationship with it. Whereas if you occasionally, you know, do a big psilocybin journey every few years or every year or something like that, but you're going in with this intention, I think that's perfectly fine, perfectly healthy. And, you know, what we know from the medical side is that it's not like a damaging issue. Like if you did a big psilocybin dose every year, that doesn't have damage, that actually could have benefit on both the physical and mental side. So again, it's being more in tune to what your body needs.
We use the phrase a lot, be more curious and less judgmental. I think that would help a lot of people. and the information from the past with, oh, the drugs you're taking and the things you're doing, you know, the judgmental part versus the being more curious into what is new, what we've understand now that we didn't know back then, and realizing right. that this is just one method of healing still. This is just one more method and several different ways tool within this toolbox, this toolbox that you can use these tools. But eating right, watching what you're drinking, all of these things add up. Everybody wants that. I need that big pill now to be healthy now, or those steroids to get big now. Everybody wants everything so quick. They don't realize it's all a buildup of the little things that we do that add up to this whole thing.
The interesting thing is, as crazy as, you know, complex as a psychedelic experience can be, it always leads back to the most simple answers of, you know, love yourself, be open to love, breathe right, keep things simple, eat simply. All these things are messages that generally come out. We all kind of know what the course is to be healthier. It's just a question if we can avoid the vices and the other stuff that come into our life.
Right. The self-awareness and admittance of,
yeah,
it's my fault. Whatever happens to me is still my fault. I mean, mostly, you know, the and things that I bring into my life, my responsibility. Yeah. I can control that. And when we realize that and we stop blaming everybody else, we can really make a big difference in ourselves.
Absolutely.
Is there anything we haven't asked you and talked about that you think people need to know?
People can find out more information. You know, I know through you guys, just you guys have been great advocates, but through heroicheartsproject.org. I will say, since we kind of mentioned the spouse side of things, is just for people to be conscious that we often kind of get singular focus on the veteran themselves of, you know, that PTSD diagnosis, but trauma, you know, reverberates through the whole family. That's the value of the organization like the Hope Project is, you know, spouses oftentimes will have just as much and different trauma as the veteran themselves. And so if we're only just focusing on the veteran, there's still going to be a huge rift there. There still might be some issues with the kids or children or other parts of the family or community. It's kind of coming back to not just the individual, but the family, the community. And the more we have healthier versions of that and more supportive, the better we're going to do. And so as a veteran community, we really need to do the work to reestablish community, because we really don't have good pillars of that in these current generations of veterans. And so I think with psychedelics and these other healing modalities, just focusing that around, how do we improve this? How do we make it more healthy? That's the only way we'll actually address the suicide epidemic. It's all about support and accountability within the community. And I think we're just severely lacking that. But yeah, other than that, people can find out more information on our website, on our social media. And, you know, we're always happy to help where we can.
It's amazing. And you've been a great help. And I know you've helped walk us through this process, and we're really grateful for it.
Absolutely grateful for it. For sure. I know Jen is, for even more than me, probably.
I am.
There's always a bigger problem somewhere. Mine's gone. Yeah. Thanks for your time, Jesse, and yeah, everything you've done for us personally and for everyone else out there that you've helped already, and those that you will help.
And I would love to call out to folks if they're looking to make a donation or support, please head over to Jesse's organization, Heroic Heart Project. We are all nonprofits. We all need support. And if this is something that you've gone through or you're interested in and had a great experience, pay it forward, and literally pay it forward. Head on over to Jesse's. They're doing amazing work. They're helping a ton of folks. We really appreciate what you're doing, Jesse. And thanks for your time today.
I appreciate it. And the respect is mutual. You guys are doing amazing things. And I'm glad to be working in the same ecosystem and with you both.
Yeah,
absolutely. That's how we get jobs done, right?
Yeah. All absolutely. Hands on deck.